Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth. Financial planning can be overwhelming, regardless of market conditions. I specialize in retirement and legacy planning and tax minimization strategies. Protect your family and future generations without sacrificing our shared principles of hard work and American independence. Take control of your financial future. Call me, Mike Venaria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
All right, so the good news is that the Cramnibus bill is dead. The spending clash. President Trump weighing in. Vice President J.D. Vance weighing in. And looks like now it is over. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. But we still need a spending bill to avoid a government shutdown, or do we? On X at Rich Zeoli. Big fourth and final hour. And this is so Friday we're going to be in Cape May for our next live show. I want to see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We always have a great time together in Cape May. And that's coming up this Friday. Last show of the year for us and last live show in Cape May. So join us this Friday at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey from 3 to 7 p.m. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I want to see you there. But let me play. I want to share with you. Senator Kennedy today erupting at NCAA President Charlie Baker about his refusal to side with women in sports. And I love Kennedy. He's one of my favorite people. He's got a lot of great little quips. This is no different. Cut 21.
Why don't you take a position on transgender biological males competing against females? You just told me it wasn't fair.
There's a federal standard on this is one that we would work with you on if you wish to work on it.
Why don't you do it on your own?
Because we're a national governing body and we follow federal law.
Why don't you go to Amazon and buy a spine online and take a stand?
Good for him. Here's Senator Josh Hawley going after the NCAA president. Take a listen.
Have guidelines that instruct them what the best practices are. And your guidelines say that biological men can go in and use the women's locker rooms if they want to. What the women want has nothing to do with it. They're not mentioned in here at all. Correct? Correct. It's right here. You just reaffirmed them in May of this year. I've got them. I'm reading them.
I believe our guidelines give people optionality with respect to how they choose to use their facilities.
What does that mean? Optionality. What it says is transgender student athletes will be able to use the locker room, shower, and toilet in accordance with their gender identity. That means men will be able to use the women's locker rooms. And as Riley Gaines and others have testified before this committee, that means if a man, a biological man, wants to use their locker room, they just have to accept it. Or else the women have to go somewhere else. They've got to go find an alternative. Why is that fair?
We told the local folks who've hosted our tournaments they need to create accommodations for the people who are playing.
You know, so it's the feds on the one hand, it's the locals on the other hand. The only person who doesn't seem to bear any responsibility in this is you and the NCAA, who are the governing body. And your testimony here today is you're not even subject to Title IX. Mr. Baker, I can't tell you how disappointed this makes me. But not just disappointed, frankly, infuriated for the student-athletes who are suffering because of your policies, and you won't even defend them. You won't even take responsibility. It's outrageous.
Senator,
it's totally outrageous.
Good for him for speaking out. And by the way, Paula Scanlon, who's another hero who's been speaking out about this issue, she's also going to be on the show with us on Friday. So I'm looking forward to that, having that conversation with her. Paul is terrific, and she's a great person. really well spoken on this issue. She swam for Penn. She knows exactly firsthand how important this issue is to young women. But of course, the big story today is that after the Cramnibus bill was put out, a lot of Republicans came out and spoke out against it. Ultimately, J.D. Vance and President-elect Donald Trump, with their combined statement, which I shared with you earlier in the show today, they came out and they said, you know, this thing is terrible and we need to just a short-term spending gap, but not all this crap in it. That's what we need. And that's the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria. Are you hesitant about getting that complex dental procedure done? Well, don't be. Call Dr. Mike for a second opinion. He'll put your mind to ease. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020. And I asked you to pull a clip, and now I can't remember what I asked you to pull, Matt. I totally forgot now. What was
it was Stephanopoulos.
Right, yes. Okay, so.
But hang on, I definitely have it somewhere.
Then you forgot to pull it. I forgot what I asked you, and then, yes. Yeah, we're not getting any nudie pajama commercials this year, Johnny Cook. I guess not. I don't know what to tell you. Well, I don't know what to say. Yeah, I guess not. Sorry. But I do have an op-ed at foxnews.com you can read. You can go to foxnews.com and read the opinion that I wrote about the drones and the impact on the Jersey governor's race in 2025. There you go. All right. As you pull that up, let me just set the table for you. You have it?
Yeah.
All right. So this is the unbiased journalist, George Stephanopoulos, talking to Nancy Mace, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a few months ago. And he blatantly lies about Donald Trump and E. Jean Carroll. This would lead to a defamation suit. Most political figures would just ignore this and, you know, go, I'm a public figure. I can't fight back. Not Trump. No. He comes out and he says, the hell with that. I was not convicted of rape. Sues him. And then ABC settles. And now they're going to pay $15 million towards President Trump's future presidential library. And ABC Disney China, I mean, the corporate company that owns ABC News is Disney. And the corporate company that owns Disney is, of course, China. So ABC News, Disney China, and the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos, and this is what he said. Take a listen.
Yes, this morning. And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George, and I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump.
No,
you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they?
It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive, and I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to.
You are.
Well, in fact,
I have dealt with this for 30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, rape or incest in there? I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
They are judged and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning. I think it's disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all.
I told my story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
Okay. Now, article in the New York Post, it just came out a short time ago. ABC News and George Stephanopoulos agree to apologize to Trump, pay $16 million in defamation case settlement. Well, actually, that's not the new one. This is the new one. George Stephanopoulos is apparently apoplectic and humiliated over ABC News' $16 million defamation suit settlement with Trump. I said 15, it's actually 16. And the fact that he has to apologize. Particularly upset about being forced to apologize, according to a source with knowledge of the situation. Another source told the Post George is defiant. A third source said Stephanopoulos is a very guarded person. His circle of trust is so small, and a lot of them don't work at ABC anymore. The First Insider added that the host of This Week had recently signed a contract extension with Disney, the owner of ABC News, and China. But the source did not disclose the terms of the deal. The former President Bill Clinton aide, oh, I didn't realize that was the same guy, has kept a low profile, blah, 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 blah. He deactivated his X account where he had more than 2.3 million followers. But, you know, there you go. I mean, that he defamed Trump by saying that he was convicted of rape. He was not convicted of rape. And they were about to do depositions. And what I think was going to come out in those depositions was that George Stephanopoulos knew that former President Trump had not been found liable for rape by a jury and was told not to go out there and say those things and went out there and said those things anyway. That's what I've heard in terms of why they decided to settle this, because otherwise, why not go forward with the trial if they felt like they had the facts on their side? They didn't. Reputational damage. And I tell you what, ABC Disney China has suffered a lot of it. I don't know if Stephanopoulos will wind up getting fired. I just have always found it to be amazing. And this is why I make the joke about him being the unbiased journalist. I'm just always amazed. This guy who was Clinton's hatchet man, who used to threaten reporters and all these other things, is allowed to host, to be the senior political guy on ABC News, host the ABC This Week show, be a Good Morning America anchor. Well, nobody cares about Good Morning America, but that's why I joke that he's the unbiased journalist. And Trump was found in this civil trial of defamation, but it wasn't a jury convicting him of raping E. Jean Carroll. That's a very important thing, because rape is a criminal matter. And you can't just go out there and say those things about people. And he kept saying it over and over and over again, to the point where in that interview, you clearly hear that he keeps repeating himself, So now they've agreed to apologize to President Trump. And I think this is a big win. Not everybody does, though. Ex-Washington Post and CNN's Chris Saliza and Chuck Todd, they say ABC never should have settled with Trump. They say they never should have settled. Cut number one. Cut one.
Uh-oh. I mean, again, look at what he did to E. Jean Carroll. It's not, there is precedent for him being held liable for disparaging people personally. And he's done it so much that I don't, again, I know he loves to be litigious. And, you know, I don't think I always thought the lawsuit was just designed for him to say he had a lawsuit.
Of course.
It wasn't, right, that it's sort of, why do you file the lawsuit against the media company?
I mean, when I was at CNN, he filed the lawsuit against CNN. He's filed lots and lots and lots of lawsuits.
And they always get thrown out. And this one would have, too. I just don't see how they thought it wasn't going to be. Other than it was clear that there were, I think, Trump's side felt more motivated to go further than they have in previous suits.
Now, the jurors rejected Carroll's claim that she was raped. The judgment adds to Trump's legal woes and offers vindication to Carroll, blah, blah, blah. The jury found him responsible for a lesser degree of sexual abuse. But the jurors rejected E. Jean Carroll's claim that she was raped. Of course, this is the AP story. So you see, to their point, why didn't ABC News fight it and say, well, we're parsing words here, rape, sexual, because I think the reason is because George Stephanopoulos was probably told not to use the R word because the R word has serious implications, but he wanted to keep saying it over and over again as he badgered Nancy Mace, badgered her, made a jackass out of himself, and was doing it all on purpose because, see, he's a word guy. Stephanopoulos is a word guy. He was Clinton's speechwriter. He was Clinton's communications director. He's a smart guy. He wrote a book, very, very, it's actually a great political memoir, but he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. He's not a kind of guy that would use the rape word if he wasn't doing it intentionally. He's a man who spent his entire career advising politicians on using the right words, and he understands the responsibility and the magnitude, but you see, he wanted Trump to lose. And what he wanted people to take away from that interview was, well, here, how can you, as a rape victim, back somebody who was just convicted of rape? But he wasn't convicted of rape. In fact, the jurors rejected that. But you see, doing so, George Stephanopoulos thinks, oh, well, I can say whatever I want. I'm in the corporate media. I'm protected. I can say whatever I want, but you can't say whatever you want. You can't just go out there and defame people like that. It has to be factual. And if you can prove that the motivation was there, like, in other words, I think in deposition, what you would have found was George Stephanopoulos knew damn well Trump was not convicted of rape. In which case, then it could have gone from being a $15 million settlement to being a whole lot more. Plus, all of that could have come out, too, that Stephanopoulos knowingly went into that interview, understanding the difference between what the jury ruled and what the jury didn't rule, and yet did it anyway, because he wanted to get across the R word, rape, so many times in that interview with Nancy Mace. I think that's what would have come out in the deposition, which is why ABC News settled, because they wanted to avoid the depositions. And that's the point that Chuck Todd and Chris Saliza are missing here, because they're not privy to all that. But that's my sense. That's my guess of it. And it would clearly show in the depositions that George Stephanopoulos knew exactly what he was doing it purposely for the purposes of defaming Donald Trump on national television, even though not a lot of people watch that. Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville, talking about RFK Jr., who's also going to be hopefully confirmed, this time as HHS secretary. Kennedy had said that RFK Jr. was all over the map when it came to abortion, but Tommy Tuberville says RFK Jr. has assured him that they have an agreement on the subject. It won't be an issue for him as the director, or I should say the cabinet secretary, to run the Department of Health and Human Services. This is cut 10.
Whose question?
How'd the meeting go?
It went good, very positive. He's upbeat. He is 9 months older than me, so he's got a lot more knowledge than I do. But we're basically the same age, and I remember his past and how he grew up, and it was fun to talk to him about his family. But at the end of the day, we talked about abortion, and big thing about abortion is he's telling everybody, he said, "Listen, whatever President Trump, I'm going to back him 100%. And, of course, President Trump is for the three exceptions. We've all heard that. We talked about our farmers in Alabama, which they're very concerned about food and food safety, but not go overboard where we can't have good crops. And I can understand that, and he's very on board. He understands our farmers are in trouble, and we want to make sure that we have farmers that can make a living and we don't lose our family farms.
What specific questions did you ask him about abortion? What concerns did you?
Well, I just asked him. I said, you know, in the past you've been pro-abortion, and he said, well, it's basically he and President Trump had sat down and talked about it, and both of them came to an agreement. Hey, Roe Wade is gone back to the states. Let the people vote on it, and that's been mine all along. I'm pro-life. But I am glad that the American citizens have a chance to vote in their state, and he's the same way.
I tell you, the other issue I want to mention right now is, speaking of abortion, it looks like this bill has been aborted, but they need a plan B now. House GOP leaders scramble for plan B after Trump and Musk lead conservative fury against the spending bill. I think it's really the people who led the fury. But I'm glad that Trump spoke out about it. I'm glad J.D. Vance spoke out about it. And I think the message has been sent very, very clear. Just do a very short spending bill to go into the new year and then start governing and cut the crap. And I talked about this with my buddy Brianna Lyman earlier in the show today. If you missed it, go back and take a listen to the podcast. I thought I was going to get her for a victory lap. What happened? She wasn't available? Probably going on Fox News. That's why.
Well, she's very busy.
She went on Fox News, isn't she?
She could be. I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't seen her on there, but she better not be.
What?
It's outrageous. She's going to be back on Fox News Saturday night before I am. It's outrageous.
But you have a column.
It's outrageous. I do have a column on FoxNews.com. That's a good point. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is I'll be filling in for Jimmy Fallon's radio show tomorrow on Fox Across America. So there'll be that, too. So I could still show the op-ed tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
I've got a long shelf life.
I feel like you probably just keep mentioning it for the rest of the week.
Might as well. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Then I go on Christmas break on Friday after the Grand Hotel show, and then I won't be able to start shilling for my Fox News appearances until after I get back. And now I got to wait till January freaking 18th Some friend you are, Fela.
Once a month is pretty good.
There's only twice four, a month is better.
There's only four shows per month.
That's a fair point. It's a fair point. I'm not a math guy. You're right. That's a good point. All right. A lot more to get to in our fourth and final hour here, including San Francisco and fat shaming and a guy who wants to become governor of New Jersey. I will interview any candidate who wants to come on the show. Ed Durr will be up next with me later, hopefully this week or when I get back. But for now, we'll talk to Jersey Jim. But don't go away.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, as we continue along the show here today, appreciate you being here. Just a programming note for you. Tomorrow, I will be filling in for Jimmy Fela again on Fox Across America. So tune in. That'll be a lot of fun. We'll have a good time with that. That'll be a hoot. And my opinion piece at foxnews.com, which I've been promoting all throughout the show today, obviously beating it to death, on how the drones will affect the 2025 governor's race in New Jersey. Actually, one of those candidates for governor is going to join me next, Jim Fazzone. He's running for governor. My rule is simple. If you reach out to me, I'll put you on the show. Jack Ciccarelli's been on. Ed Durr will be on soon. But I do want to mention this, though. A couple things. San Francisco. The health department in San Francisco has hired a fat positivity expert to consult on weight stigma and neutrality. Virgie Tovar, the author of You Have the Right to Remain Fat, called the partnership an absolute dream come true. Look at that. So now it's a fat partnership with the public health department because there's an anti-weight-based discrimination out there, and so they need to bring in an expert to consult on weight stigma and weight neutrality in a city that's overrun by homeless people of all size, pooping things of all size on the streets of San Francisco. That's where we are right now. And I'm just saying this is, she said she's unbelievably proud to serve the city she's called home for almost 20 years in this way. This consultancy is an absolute dream come true. And my biggest hope and belief that weight neutrality will be the future of public health. She's a plus-size Latina author, lecturer, and leading expert on weight-based discrimination and body positivity. I guess I got to ask the obvious question. Haven't we been told that being overweight is unhealthy? Haven't we been told that being overweight leads to diabetes and heart disease and inflammation and all these other things? So why, in the name of political correctness, would we tell people that we should be neutral if it's unhealthy? Why not have smoking neutrality? I'm not saying you should shame people, but at the same time, I mean, for public health educators and public health officials to turn around and go, oh, no, it's totally fine. Totally fine. You're overweight. You're putting absolute stress on your body, your heart. Your life expectancy is shorter. Your proclivity to get very, very sick is much higher. But hey, listen, in the name of not making you feel shamed, you should just go with it. Go with it. I find that to be so not only counterproductive, but just unfair to people. Again, I'm not saying you insult people. I'm not saying you mock them. I'm just simply saying, let's be honest about public health. No different than smoking or drinking. I mean, how about alcoholism neutrality? It could destroy your liver, but feel good about it. You could die in a drunk driving accident, but hey, neutrality. If something's unhealthy for you, you should work on it. And that's where you should be. Again, not saying you shame people, but here's the other, not only is this a part of what's the problem, I think. Like, for example, she said, talk less or not at all about how you and others eat at work. Talk less or not at all about you or others' bodies at work. So we're not going to be able to have conversations at work about what we eat for lunch or dinner. So that'd be the next great HR scandal. Somebody will come in and go, oh, what did you guys do last night? Oh, went to dinner. Really? Yeah, it was great. How was it? Oh, phenomenal. Had this juicy burger and everything. Yep, that'll be the next thing you get written up for. Talk less or not at all about exercise at work. Hey, Jim, what's going on? Ah, nothing much. Just came from the gym this morning. Oh, HR violation. You're shaming people. She says we shouldn't presume that food, weight, body size, or exercise are safe or comfortable topics to discuss at work for everyone. So that means that, let's understand this now, you can't talk about food. So say I go in the break room. Somebody's heating up an entree. I go, whoa, what do you have? I go, I have macaroni and cheese. Really? That sounds great. No, it's a trigger, all right? Because I'm trying to give up carbs. So now I'm going to send you to HR, and you're going to be in trouble for it. How dare you put carbs in front of me? I'm doing keto, damn it. And you can't talk about exercise. So if you say to somebody, oh, yeah, I rode my bike to work, does that count, or do they like that because that's green? I don't know. I can't keep score. I have no idea. New Jersey is looking to blunt social media impacts of eating disorders. And what I'm trying to understand about this is what that means in terms of freedom of speech. So there's a bill in New Jersey that, of course, is sponsored by Democrats, that would target social media platforms for encouraging anything that leads to an eating disorder. So does that mean then if somebody is posting a picture of themselves and the woman happens to be beautiful and somebody looks at that and gets triggered, so beauty will be a trigger? And I guess we'll ban that too. We'll censor that. Try to understand all these things. It's very difficult to keep up here. It really is. It's very difficult. Just tell me the rules. Like, I started watching Tulsa King, and thanks to Susie for that recommendation. Susie, cool. And there's a great line in there where he talks about pronouns. He's like, with the pronouns and this and that, and, you know, he's like, I'm all for change, but they keep moving the goalposts here. They keep moving the goalposts, and that's the problem. And it's very frustrating. But I got to share this with you. Old, frail, and moody. White House aides finally tell the truth about lame duck Joe Biden. White House aides are describing a weary, frail, and moody President Joe Biden in the final months of his term in office after years of insisting the 82-year-old could run for a second term. According to the New York Times, since dropping out of the presidential race, and even more so since the 2024 election, Biden has largely disappeared from the national stage. President-elect Donald Trump has dominated headlines as he has nominated his cabinet and conducted meetings with world leaders. Biden's chief of staff, Jeffrey Zients, has said the president wants to sprint to the finish line in the coming weeks, but those close to Biden have observed a slower, more tired president. That's so strange because I thought it was the best version of Joe Biden we've ever seen, according to Joe Scarborough. Quote, he looks a little older and a little slower with each passing day. Aides say he remains plenty sharp in the Situation Room. Oh, God, please tell me he's not going in the Situation Room. Please tell me that it's a pretend Situation Room they built for him. Like I pretend like a pillow fort is a princess castle for my daughter. Please tell me it's not the real Situation Room. No. It's a cardboard cutout. We just tell him it's a Situation Room. Okay, good. Better. That makes me feel better. Calling world leaders to broker a ceasefire in Lebanon or deal with the chaos of Syria's rebellion. But it's hard to imagine that he seriously thought he could do the world's most stressful job for another 4 years, according to the New York Times. During Biden's trip to the Amazon rainforest in November, those close to the president on his travels noticed an increase in his fragility. The New York Times reported, after giving remarks on the trip, the president turned and walked down a dirt path behind the lectern, which left several people in the audience not used to seeing him up close holding their breath and concerned the 82-year-old would trip, according to the New York Times. Aides told the outlet that the president's gait was no more unsteady than usual. Guy's always falling down. Nothing unusual. Come on, you watched him fall up the stairs of Air Force One. You saw that with your own eyes. A man defying gravity and falling up the stairs. Shortly after, in December, the president took a trip to Angola, where he was scheduled to visit the National Museum of Slavery. Upon attendance, artifacts were brought out to the president for him to see because there was fear he could not climb the steep stairs in the building. Well, he would have fell up those stairs too, obviously. I just can't wait till January 20th, honestly. I mean, and the article goes on and on about how some people close to Biden admit his slowing state. Some have noticed an engaged president. Well, you heard his comments on the drones earlier today. He's really engaged, no doubt about it. Oh, definitely. He is. I mean, this version of Joe Biden is the most engaged version of Joe Biden we've ever seen. Oh, absolutely. No doubt about that. It's unbelievable, right? You know what the other thing, too, I was thinking about? When you are looking at the incoming administration and you think about all the people who voted for Donald Trump, who had voted for Joe Biden in 2020, and why they voted for Trump in 2024 and not Kamala Harris, and you actually break it down, a big part of it is the fact that they know this administration lied and covered up Joe Biden's health because we're sick and tired of the gaslighting. We're sick and tired of it. And that comes back to the drone issue, like I've been saying, because we're being gaslit on that too. And people have just had it. And you know what? I mean, Trump, you say what you want about the guy. I mean, I happen to like him, but the guy tells you what he thinks and he tells you the truth all the time, period. There's no gaslighting that comes out of Trump's mouth. He's incapable of it. He's just as authentic as it comes. And that is such a contrast with the Democrats, such a contrast with what we see from these people on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, whether it's Mayorkas or whether it's the admiral at the Pentagon or whether it's the FBI, I mean, the lies that they tell us about these drones, come on, come on. I'm getting tired of it. So check out my piece at Fox News. The great drone scare will flip New Jersey red in 2025. The drones are a symbol of Democratic gaslighting, inaction, and arrogance. That's what I wrote over at foxnews.com, opinion. So check it out. It's my first piece. And you know, I'm a talker, not a writer. I like to talk. And I'm not a math guy, as you know. But it's fun, nevertheless, to be able to get the word across and talk about the governor's race, because it is going to be an incredibly important race next year. And all eyes will be on us. All eyes will be on New Jersey and Virginia, too. Winsome Earl Sears is going to be running for governor of Virginia. She's the lieutenant governor now. She's great. She's fantastic. So I hope she will, I would assume, get the nomination, but you never know how it goes. We'll see. Either way, though, both states, given the momentum we saw in the 2024 election, given how education is going to be one of the big issues. And what I mean by that is the woke curriculum, like what we talked about earlier in the show. If you missed it, it's podcast for you. But the head of the NCAA and Senator Kennedy saying to him, grow a spine, man. Stop saying about the transgender athletes that you don't see a difference between bio dudes versus women. Like, enough already. Grow a spine. All right, more to come in our fourth and final hour. Let's meet a guy who's running for governor of New Jersey. He wants to run in 2025. We'll talk to Jim Fizzone next here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, joining me now, he is running for governor of New Jersey as a Republican. He's a former mayor. He's a former school administrator. He's a Jersey guy. He's Jersey Jim Fizzone. And he joins me now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Rich. Thank you for having me on today.
Absolutely. Well, you are three candidates who've reached out so far to ask me to come on the show. So I'm happy to oblige and give you the opportunity to tell everybody who you are and why it is you want to run for governor of New Jersey.
Okay, so I actually have always wanted to run for governor. The thing I like, I was an elected official for over 30 years in the state of New Jersey, between the city of Burlington mayor for 8 years and councilman and also Board of Education. By the same token, I was a school administrator. I was a superintendent of schools at Mercer County Technical and Special Services. I like the combination of being an elected official and being an administrator. I also taught leadership at Drexel University and several other universities. So I feel like I have a good background, but it is always something that I've wanted to do. I think I've had programs at the city level, at the superintendent's level for school districts that I think can help the state of New Jersey. And I really think the governor's spot in a leadership spot is where I can help with all my municipal background in leadership as well as in education. But you really need to be at a high level in order to implement some of those things that I've done so far statewide.
Now, so you were the mayor of Burlington City. Have you ever run for governor before?
I've never run for governor before. I did run for Senate this past year, and Burlington County, not familiar, it's kind of a 3-1 Democrat to Republican. Yep. They beat us 2-1, but, you know, statistics are for losers, they say. So we were trying to win the election. The state of New Jersey is a little more forgiving. You really have about 1/3 Republican, 1/3 Democrat, and 1/3 undeclared. So I think it's a level playing field, and I think we can do well.
So let's talk about the drones, first and foremost, because I just wrote a piece at FoxNews.com today how the drone scare of 2024 is going to flip New Jersey red in 2025. Actually, it's changing the dynamics of things. What are your thoughts on how this administration is handling it? What are you hearing from people? What are they saying?
They couldn't handle it any worse, and that's what I would say. As a mayor, you're in a leadership position. As a governor, you're in a leadership position. As you're in the president, you're the leader. You're hearing from a lot of people who are congressmen and senators. They only have power when they're in session and they can promote and support a bill. When an emergency comes up, the leadership, the executive branch, governor right now, president, they need to take over, and they have not done that at all. In the absence of true leadership, chaos and fear are in command, and that's really what's going on right now. They can't even give us a good statement as to what's taking place. To say that you're safe, but we don't know what it is, that's just not enough. What they would need to do, and again, in Burlington, we had emergencies. Public service was ready to blow to kingdom come. We had two hurricanes. We had a family held hostage by gunpoint. You need to have an emergency operations center. You get all your people together. You find out, and you get fire, police, hazmat, fire, the emergency services, and you find out what's the best plan, and you implement that plan. Here, they haven't even done anything. They're totally absent. I thought they were going to have a really good statement after they had the meeting last week at the Regional Operations Center. We call it the ROC. That's their emergency operations center. The governor didn't show up. People are just scrambling. There's no leadership. And people are just wondering.
Yeah, Jim, there's a lot of frustration out there. Jim Fazone is joining me now. He's running for governor of New Jersey as a Republican in the upcoming primary, which will be in June, and the general election in November, New Jersey being one of two states that'll have a governor's race in 2025, New Jersey and Virginia. Jim, what are some of the other big issues that you're running on?
Well, number one is that we have to lower taxes. And we're going to lower taxes, and I've had some experience with this, again, at the city level, but same and also at superintendent's level, is to go with shared services. When I came into Burlington, we had a few departments that were just costing us too much money, housing and community development. I went with shared services, saved $1 million a year. The courts, we didn't need to have a court that was, you know, it was just overstaffed. So we shared with Burlington Township, saved about the same amount of money. When we're talking about levels of government that don't need to exist, there are a lot of ways we can cut. One thing I would eliminate, and you know, you notice that Donald Trump is going to eliminate the Department of Education on a national level, and they really don't really even serve a purpose. The only purpose they serve is that they force every state to impose standardized testing on their children. That's a multi-billion dollar operation. I would really eliminate that standardized testing. And again, I taught assessment and testing at Drexel and some other schools. The word assess comes to us from the Latin root assessus, which means to sit beside. So that formative assessment that needs to takes place on a daily basis with teachers. They sit beside the student and they say things like, well, maybe we can align those columns on that math problem up a little better. Or, is there a different way you could have said what you said? That's the kind of assessment that we need. Standardized testing, it's a one-shot deal, costs a lot of money, and it shuts the schools down for about 6 weeks out of the year. It used to be testing day, became testing week, became testing month, became now testing 6 weeks, and they bring in a vendor to give the testing, shut all the, and they have all the kids scared. They have, I'm going to cut standardized testing immediately.
Well, that's good. I can tell you, as a parent, the entire process is brutal on all of us. I mean, it's a tough time. November itself, we always joke that our kids are barely in school. There's so many half days and the teachers' convention and everything. I was talking to mom the other day at the school bus, and we said the same thing. It's like November's a wash the entire month.
November is absolutely a wash. But I think testing month is worse, I think.
Yeah.
November, maybe the teachers are off and the kids are home a little bit. But it's just draconian what takes place during that standardized testing. And it would be easy to do because the governor and the appointed commissioner of education have a lot of leverage in how you deliver instruction. And the other thing is, the state is really in charge of education. And in New Jersey, we have a statement in the Constitution that all students will have a thorough and efficient education. What that 6 week of testing has to do with a thorough and efficient education escapes me as a superintendent and a board member and a parent.
Let me ask you about immigration. It's obviously a huge issue. New Jersey is a border state now, like every other state. President Trump, if you become governor, you'll have a partner in the White House. You also have somebody who wants to see criminals deported and make that a priority. Are you going to help him with that?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be cooperative. I mean, we had Ellis Island in New Jersey. Everybody that was coming from Europe came through Ellis Island. My grandparents on both sides, the Sicilians on the one side and the Irish Germans on the other side. And there was a process, and you had to come and you had to check in and, you know, you had to give your identification. And you can't just have an open border and have people coming in. It's just not safe, and we need safety and security of the environment is huge, and being able to have some control over that immigration process is important. I have an adopted son from Korea. It was a very arduous process. We love him to death. He's we would say he's the smartest of our three kids. I have one that's a molecular biology PhD. The other one's a lawyer, and Andrew kind of works with his hands, and I do want to get to the hands-on learners. He's doing quite well financially, too. Because in education, another thing I want to implement is a turn back to the career technical education. Again, I was superintendent of Mercer County Technical Schools, and we've missed two generations, probably, of carpenters and welders and plumbers and electricians. We even had a program for criminalistics. We had auto technical. These kids are so smart, and they get out of school with potential to make $100,000 a year with no student loan. And I just think we need to refocus on those career technical programs and even bring them back into the middle school so that kids are motivated, they're exposed to it, they're working with their hands. And it's been an ongoing battle since 1909, I guess, the struggle back and forth between career technical and only going with the college prep. They don't have to be separate. They're together, and you can come from career technical, build a career, stackable careers. There's construction management masters over in Drexel. So it's an ongoing process of education, but I want students to be able to participate and have a good career and have a good salary, have good benefits, and refocusing on that CTE is a big part of it, I think.
Jim Fazzone is with me. He's running for governor. All right. So, but in terms of the deportations of criminals and other people, will you work with Donald Trump on that issue?
Absolutely. And we want to get it right. Anytime we're doing something like that, it's not something you just do overnight with a broad. I will absolutely work with the president on that. But we want to make sure that we're being fair, because what we're dealing with now, we have a train wreck of a situation. Who should be here? Who should be here? Who should not be here? We can institute a process that's fair the way it used to be at Ellis Island. But now that we have all these folks who are wandering around town, what do we do with that? That's going to take some doing.
All right, and then
but another, I will absolutely work.
Another question that's on a lot of people's minds right now, obviously, with regards to, and this is more of a kind of a I think a future question for everybody, which is energy. The Energy Master Plan for New Jersey calls out for phasing gas cars by 2035. It's brutal. We've got the wind turbines off the Jersey Shore. If you're elected governor, what would you do about all those things?
Well, first off, when I was mayor, I had the president of of PSEG, Public Service Energy Group, in, and they were talking about different things on power. Right now, natural gas is just so cheap. We really need to take advantage of it. We need to look at the future. That's certainly correct. But we need to live through this, too. I also familiar with the president of Princeton, and he teaches, actually, he just retired. But his contention is this. We need to do something about the environment within the next 2 to 3 generations, or we're going to have a problem. But the other side of it is, even according to him, we need to live through the current situation, and people who can't afford, I can't afford a Tesla. I don't know who's got a Tesla, but I got a friend of mine across the street has one. But to be able to afford, people need to go to work. We're going to put people to work, but they also need to get to work. And in order to get to work, we have to have some reasonable plan that involves transportation. Public transportation will help us too, but as far as the energy, we need to be able to live now, and all our residents need to be able to live now.
Jim, where can people go to learn more about your campaign?
So you can. I'm on basically all of the social medias. I guess they talked about taking TikTok off. I don't know what happened with that. But on TikTok, I'm Jim.Fazone on TikTok. And you can just really Google me. I can see articles that are up around and about our campaign. But our campaign is supporting families, workers, and taxpayers. And that's really our focus.
All right, Jim, thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia. And best of luck to you in the campaign. And Merry Christmas to you and your family. And I'm sure we'll be talking in the new year.
Merry Christmas to you and yours, Rich Zeoli, and thank you for having me on.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.